Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey-o, 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 hey-o. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey-hey-o, hey-o, hey-o, hey-o. And all living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey-hey-o, hey-o, hey-o, hey-o. Ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be, and we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care. Anila nijone go shavotya, nijone go shavotya. Hey, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Hey, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawatakwasin, to all of our relations.
Tragedias, ahí nunca se puede perder. Hay un mundo diferente, más allá del que solemos ver. De ese mundo, verdadero es el mundo de tu rico ser. Ese mundo está en tu mente, es el sitio al que perteneces. Ese mundo es la conciencia de nuestra felicidad en el ser. Hay un puente al infinito, hay un puente al verdadero ser, donde el mundo es diferente, donde nadie tiene que perder.
From Costa Rican singer-songwriter Johnny Schroeder, from his CD, Soy un Rayo de Luz. That beautiful song was entitled Un Mundo Diferente. I had the pleasure of getting to know Mr. Schroeder some years ago when the United Nations University for Peace in Costa Rica co-sponsored an event with the Indigenous Peoples Program of the Earth Charter, a conference on the environment and Indigenous Peoples' rights and sovereignty. Ashkwe, greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. In today's program, we focus on the very important issue of farm worker justice. We are very, very honored to have a staff representative from the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, my friend Mr. Max Perez, and a volunteer supporter of CIW, Mr. Sean Sellers. The worldwide farm worker movement is a struggle for human rights and environmental social justice. This movement is more than just another important issue Yaak Kedishi Native Center is concerned about. Farm worker justice is very personal to me, since in my youth, like many Wabanaki Indians, I too was a farm worker. Until fairly recently, most of America's commercial blueberries, cranberries, and raspberries were harvested by American Indian labor in our homelands, traditional territory stolen by America. I remember as a boy working berry crops as well as the hard work of picking apples and potatoes. Most North Americans are not aware that just a generation ago, many of the foods people eat with little thought about how it gets onto their table came from the hard work of American Indian farm workers and other cultural peoples from the Caribbean and Central America. Many of these agricultural industries that American Indians worked in have become more mechanized and automated within the past decade and a half, so the need for Native American labor has greatly diminished. Also, agribusiness is now a major part of globalization, which means many crops once grown in the United States are now raised and harvested in the third world, where farm worker justice is even more of a tough struggle. Many of our Wolf Mountain Radio listeners know that I am now forced to be in a wheelchair. I know that part of my poor health is directly related to my years as a farm worker when I was contaminated by pesticide, herbicide, and fertilizer sprays. In those days, and probably even in today's agriculture, farm workers were not informed of chemical insecticide use ahead of time by growers. We were not provided with so-called protective equipment, nor allowed to leave the fields even during spring. In my youth and into my teenage years, our Indian people also depended upon family gardens and hunting and fishing for part of our food subsistence. Tragically, our animal, plant, and fish relatives likewise became quite contaminated from many agricultural chemicals impacting the environment. These poisons became more magnified and deadly within the food chain. This, of course, greatly affected us Native people's health. Pesticide, herbicide use also caused the soil in our once healthy organic gardens to become toxic, killing our plant relatives. We traditional people grew plants for food and gathered wild flora for medicines in a ceremonial manner. Agribusiness has greatly devastated our traditional cultural life ways. We Indians, like other poor people and people of color, health and well-being were not a concern to government or industry, even with the publication of Rachel Carson's important book, Silent Spring, which shocked white America. how she exposed the ecocide of agricultural chemicals and the disrespectful attitude of government and industry to nature. Why is it, though, that white America is not so concerned or shocked about what's been happening to farm workers all these years as well? Farm workers had no real rights until the founding of the United Farm Workers, UFW, by very brave brothers and sisters, such as my hero, Cesar Chavez. I am proud to be a longtime supporter of the farm worker movement and the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. I honor them. Farm worker justice was also a civil rights concern of Dr. Martin Luther King. He was a strong supporter of farm worker organizing as well. Many other known and unknown people sacrificed much for farm worker rights and the struggles against poverty and discrimination. Tragically, our work is far from over. Farm workers' struggles continues. This is why Yat Gidishi Nader Center is sharing this important interview with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. In our program, we will also provide information on ways in which people can support farm worker justice. The Coalition of Immokalee Workers is a fine community-based organization whose purpose is to advance the well-being of farm workers and their families. In a moment, we will hear from our guests, but first I want to provide a brief summary about CIW. The organization is based in Collier County, Florida, but their coalition is active statewide and within the national farm workers movement. The CIW is well respected for their dedicated struggle to improve the poor working conditions of farm workers. The Coalition of Immokalee Workers fight social injustice and the conditions of poverty their members suffer from. Several of the major issues of concern are: 1. Ending the economic exploitation of farm labor. The major issue is a need to provide a fair living wage. The current pay level is not a livable wage. Farm workers' labor is the closest situation to slavery in America and throughout the world. 2. The need for the agribusiness industry to actually respect farm workers and to treat them and their family fairly and with dignity. This also is important for the crew bosses to observe. 3. The need to have a safe and healthy working conditions. Many times, farm workers suffer from not having proper safety measures and equipment for working in the fields. An important example of this is being properly notified of pesticide herbicide spraying schedules. Many times, as I mentioned, farm workers are caught out in the field and get contaminated from pesticide spray. Farm owners need to provide protective clothing, such as proper work boots and gloves, as another example. 4. The need for safe and clean homes. Many farm workers must live in overcrowded, dirty, and dilapidated conditions. These shanty shacks are not even fit for farm animals. 5. The need for affordable health care. The social, economic, and environmental justice issues we are talking about are common to farm workers throughout the world. They are about ending conditions of poverty and servitude most farm workers must currently endure. We are talking about the greed and conduct of multinational companies in the international agribusiness sector. We will be talking more about the huge transnational corporation, Yum Brands, whose arrogance and disrespect towards farm workers is unexcusable. This is why you will hear more about the Taco Bell restaurant boycott, a subsidiary of Yum Foods. Our program will suggest ways in which you, our worldwide listeners, can help support the farm worker movement for justice and more information on this Taco Bell boycott. While much of our interview is focused on the work of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers and the situation in what's now called Florida, listeners need to understand that these issues of injustice are part of the components of globalization. The Coalition of Immokalee Workers is geographically located in southwest Florida in the Collier County town of Immokalee, Florida. It is not far from my home here in the western Everglades region, Seminole and Miccosukee Indians call Pahayogi. In many ways, Immokalee is like a third world farm town. The community demographics consists of a large percentage of people from Central America and the Caribbean. This is intermixed with a small Seminole Indian reservation and a wealthy upper strata of predominantly white business leaders and white landowners. It should be no surprise to learn that the big, powerful agricultural industry rules this part of rural Southwest Florida. Their economic and political influence is so strong that protecting our fragile environment and caring for the well-being of farm workers is of minimal concern to them, despite the fact that their long-term business success requires both a quality environment with clean water and a ready labor source. I witnessed this firsthand in the late 1980s and early 1990s when the state of Florida established a Department of Community Affairs, the DCA. One of the priorities of DCA and state government was trying to manage the exploding rates of development as a result of being the second fastest growing state in the country. The state legislature passed important growth management laws. Each county was required to develop a growth management plan that would be incorporated into the state's overall comprehensive plan. Then the county commissioners appointed me a member of the county growth management planning advisory committee. I was an experienced environmental planner, project permitting specialist, knowledgeable about the state's growth management policy. During the years I served on the growth management committee, I focused a great deal of time on rural areas, especially Immokalee. I saw that most efforts for ensuring compliance with agricultural, environmental, and land use regulations were deliberately ignored by the ag industries, which also dictate farm worker life. This situation in Southwest Florida is quite common throughout the world. It's one example why fighting for farm worker environmental social justice is such an important struggle. I want to remind our listeners that you are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kiddushi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. My friend, my next question to you is for you to please comment. I guess what I would ask you is, what do you think about Governor Jeb Bush, his so-called support or lack of support politically for agriculture, farm workers in the state? I had the pleasure in 2001 to be a journalist and cover the coalition's march, a 22-mile walk from Quincy, Florida, farm worker community, up to the capital of Tallahassee. And I know Jeb Bush has come down to Immokalee a couple times. I was at one of his press conferences, and to me it's really nothing more than window dressing, and to be perfectly honest, just political bullshit. You, as a member of the coalition and a farm worker, what do you think about Governor Bush? Does he care at all about the coalition?
In terms of Governor Bush, I don't think he's got any power. I think that, you know, the multinational corporations these days have all of the power, but the power that he does have, he doesn't use at all in terms of trying to help out farm workers. Back before he was elected and he was, you know, doing his campaign thing, he talked a lot about helping the farm workers in terms of housing and wages and stuff. And but once he got into office, once he became governor, we never heard from him again, you know. And that was the reason why we marched up to Tallahassee. This was before the Taco Bell boycott actually happened. And when we got there, of course, he wasn't there. And so we've kind of just stepped away from trying to make any changes through the government or trying to make any changes through the growers. I mean, we're mostly focused on the people who actually donate money to the campaigns that Bush, you know, donates money to Bush's campaigns so that he can be able to run for governor. And those are like the agricultural industry here in Florida is so huge that they control a lot here. And that's basically what I was trying to say, I guess.
My next question is directed to you, Sean. I want you to please talk about the topic of so-called free trade. I know that the Coalition of Immokalee Workers and the Student Farm Worker Alliance that you are a part of are greatly concerned, as I am, about international trade and economic policy. Wolf Mountain Native Radio has, over many years, reported on the many serious social, cultural, economic, and environmental impacts directly resulting from so-called free trade agreements, such as the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Agreement, and the Free Trade Agreement of the Americas, FTAA. These so-called free trade agreements are just another chapter in the long history of colonialism and the economic plundering of our precious planet. This modern-day version, many of us call globalization, is not only increasing the desecration and devastation to sacred Mother Earth, but is also greatly widening the gaps between rich and poor people around the world. This situation is one of the most important concerns of Yad Kiddushi Native Center. Sean, would you please comment on this issue? I know that the Coalition of Mockley Workers participated in the street protests in Miami during the last free trade agreement of the Americas meeting, along with many other fine anti-globalization activists.
There's definitely a strong connection, I think, between the work that the Coalition and Student Farm Worker Alliance are doing and the struggle against free trade. Just to give a brief bit of background perspective on it, one of the things that, you know, we've kind of been figuring out as this goes along is, if we want to look at NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, as it's the direct predecessor to the Free Trade Area of the Americas. When looking at NAFTA, we see that in many cases, the folks that are here in Immokalee in the fields picking are direct victims of NAFTA in the truest sense of the word. Oftentimes, these are folks who lost their land when, as farmers, they were no longer able to compete with the cheap grain that American corporations like Cargill or Archer Daniels Midland was dumping on Mexico. So unable to compete on the market with the multinational corporations, the folks basically have the choice of moving to Mexico City or moving to the United States. When they arrive in the United States, they work the full spectrum of low-wage jobs, including farm work. So in that sense, there's a very direct connection between the struggle for farm worker justice, the work we do organizing against things like the Free Trade Area of the Americas. Basically, the reason people should be concerned, and the reason people are concerned about agreements like the FTAA, is they threaten to put everything up for grabs in the market. Things that were once held in public trust, like water, healthcare in some countries, education, become commodities that can be privatized and bought and sold on the market. That means instead of us owning the water collectively as citizens and holding it in trust through the government, corporations like Bechtel come in and buy up the water in the country. We can see with some of the events that have taken place in Bolivia that people aren't standing for this. In Bolivia, people took to the streets to protest Bechtel taking over their country's water supply. And in the end, the government gave in and the people won. So basically with the FTAA, it's another attempt to sort of tighten corporate control over our lives, over the planet, and that's why it needs to be resisted. It opens up borders for corporations and for capital, but it keeps borders firmly shut to people. It's no coincidence that during the time NAFTA has been around, there have been thousands of immigrants that have died of dehydration in the desert trying to get into the United States. Meanwhile, truck after truck of goods can come into the United States or go into Mexico. So we've opened our borders to commerce, but we've militarized our borders to people, unless you're willing to come in on, you know, a guest worker program. But even then, that poses a lot of problems in the sense that it's not really offering. For those who don't know, guest worker legislation it's not a new idea. This was actually around during World War II, but Bush has sort of revived it as a way to bring in, you know, cheap labor, essentially, to the United States. But this isn't really an acceptable solution in the long run, because it doesn't offer full legalization to people. People are still kept in vulnerable positions. So my personal take on all this is that if borders are going to be open to capital like they are, then they sure as hell should be open for people as well.
Bushes on their faces and funky looking dogs. They were loading off big bundles from triple wide canoes, full of trading items out of sight. Creation sang the blues. Tomorrow's our grand opening. Grab your ropes and furs. We'll wheel and deal and feast and drink until you end your purr. Oh, we didn't know shopping. We didn't go shopping. We didn't start shopping till the Hudson's Bay Company.
horses and dogs up the pile high skins. It was unfamiliar territory we had wandered in. A bushy-faced Nafikwan said, sit, we'll smoke and drink. As we prepared our sacred pipe, the Nafikwan she screamed. When the smoke was over, they said, got a gift for you. That'll fill your head with visions, make you strong and happy too. We didn't quite know what to think before we drank that rum. Was fire, water, devil, starter, rabbit on the run. They got us ready for shopping. They got us ready for shopping. Yeah, we were ready for shopping at the Hudson's Bay Company. Coffee beans, denim jeans, iron awls, musket balls, powder horns and pretty shawls, blankets, buttons, bolts of flannel, silver bells and tallow candles, sugar flour, dark molasses, colored beads and looking glasses, pale ale, gin and brandy, fine wine and hard rock candy. Riding through service was awful handy. Oh, we couldn't stop shopping.
No, we couldn't stop shopping.
We wouldn't stop shopping.
We wouldn't stop shopping.
We couldn't stop shopping at the Hudson's Bay Company. Now we got spandex, Gore-Tex, Nike Airs, gummy bears, ceiling fans, frying pans, turkey veal, shrimp or spam, sales cycle, sports rackets, rollerblades and jean jackets, keyboards to surf the net, on a tidal wave of debt, MasterCard, Visa card, Christopher Columbus card, American Espresso, Lord, every kind of card, and we can't stop shopping.
Well, we can't stop shopping.
We can't stop shopping.
We can't stop shopping.
We can't stop shopping at the Hudson's Bay Company. Oh, we can't stop shopping.
Well, we can't stop shopping.
We can't shopping.
We can't stop shopping.
We can't stop shopping at the Hudson's Bay Company.
Take from Blackfoot, singer-songwriter Jack Gladstone, off his Noble Heart CD, available from his Hawkstone Productions record label. That song was entitled Hudson Bay Blues. I decided to play that song because it exemplifies very similar the incredible power of multinational companies like Yum Brand Foods, the parent company of Taco Bell, that is really dictating the life and economics of farm workers, especially here in what's now called North America and the tomato industry. And it really exemplifies how multinational corporations really have been part of colonialism in what's now called North America. My indigenous peoples, we've suffered from the Hudson's Bay Company. For the benefit of our international listeners, the Hudson's Bay Company was a massive business enterprise by Euro-Americans in the so-called frontier times of North America to profit by obtaining many desired items from the indigenous peoples of what's now called the United States and Canada. Commonly referred to as the fur trade era, Hudson's Bay Company monopolized much of the economy between Indian country and white settlers. Often this was to the detriment of tribal communities and the animal and plant relations that my native people depended upon for our subsistence and spiritual well-being. Hudson's Bay and other trading companies often swindled Indian people. They introduced alcohol and prostitution into our communities. The company's actions greatly impacted our cultural societies by disrupting our tribal sense of community and sharing. Greed and disregard of many traditional ethics and clan codes of conduct infected our villages in a short period of time. Hudson's Bay and other frontier companies also had a devastating impact from their white man's diseases spread by contact with traders. there is much evidence that diseases were purposely introduced by the trading companies in order to decimate our Indian people, who often were regarded as savages. Smallpox, for example, was laced on blankets that our Indian people obtained from company men, as well as by so-called government Indian agents from the War Department. In addition, many missionaries who abused our people were often financially backed by one of the trading companies. Many churches were built adjacent to the trading posts. These Christian fanatics did their best to whitewash our native people, forcing conversion to their strange religion in so-called civilized white man's materialistic society. Historically, it is important to note that Hudson's Bay and other so-called private companies' trading posts often were in partnership with settler governments through company land grants and charters that exploited the land and indigenous First Nations people, now called North American Indians. In 1793, the Hudson's Bay Company established the first trading post in Blackfeet Indian Country, and as our singer-songwriter friend Jack Gladstone says, life was never the same again. Now, in the 21st century, that colonial economic legacy is still sadly a strong power over many of the world's people, especially indigenous peoples in the Third World. The modern version of Hudson's Bay is globalization. The control by the industrialized country over less developed nations continues to expand. It is just like the mountain men fur traders centuries ago in North America, or the European and American sea captains who sailed the oceans under government authority and corporate sponsorship for economic and political occupations of lands held sacred by non-white civilizations. The devastation to Mother Earth and the ever-widening gap between rich and poor of the world continues. The protection of our biosphere, our Mother Earth, the environment, and the elimination of poverty in the world must become one of the most vital priorities of humankind. Tragically, this critical concern seems to be overshadowed by greed on the part of many industrialized countries and their global economic systems, as well as with multinational corporations. And I can't think of really one more perfect example than the situation of Yum Brands and how they dictate and control all aspects of farm working, especially here in what's now called South Florida. This is why I wanted to share that song and little bit of narrative on the history of colonization and economic control by multinational corporations, and really encourage all of our worldwide listeners to become active in supporting the Taco Bell boycott against Yum Brands, which at the end of our program we will provide much more detailed information on contacts and ways in which you can get involved. Of our worldwide listeners perhaps really don't realize the magnitude of the situation we're discussing today, but also to bring it down to a kind of more closer personal level, I want our listeners to hear a little bit about the actual so-called living conditions that many poor people in Immokalee and towns like this throughout North America, poor people in America, have to live under. Many of the so-called homes are shacks and have very little fresh water, in some cases poor sanitation, very overcrowded. Certainly whenever I drive through some of the areas of Immokalee and some of the other areas of farming communities here in the South, it really reminds me of the conditions I grew up with in our reservation when my people lived in shacks and were very materially poor. I am going to ask my brother here to talk a little bit about squalid conditions, unfortunately, that many Mexican, Guatemalan, Haitian, African-American people to endure even in the year 2004 in the land of the free.
Basically, you wake up probably about 4:30 in the morning. You got to make up, you got to make your lunch for the day. So you can get out to, there's a store out there. It used to be called the Pantry Shelf, I don't know what it's called now, but it's a big parking lot where a bunch of buses show up, old school buses, and thousands of workers out there. It's like a labor pool out there, you know. You don't have guaranteed work every day, so you gotta wake up early, get there about 5:30 in the morning, and look for work. You're out there looking for work, probably maybe 30 minutes an hour, so it's probably 6:30, and you get on the bus, you go out to the field. But once you're out in the field, you don't actually start picking out there, so you're hanging out in the bus, because you can't pick the tomatoes, or they tell us that we can't pick the tomatoes until the plants are dry. We're literally on the bus for hours, which hours that we're not getting paid for, because we get paid piecework, which is 40-45 cents per bucket. By the time we start picking, it's probably about 9-10 o'clock, maybe. By then, you know, you're thinking about how little of the day you have left, so you start working. You don't start getting paid until the first bucket that you pick. You pick it, you run to the truck, you throw it up to somebody on the truck, and they dump it and give you a little ticket. That's the ticket is worth 40 or 45 cents. You guys stick it in your pocket and work with a bunch of these chips in your pocket all day. So you're running back and forth. You literally have to run back and forth, because if you don't run back and forth, you're not going to make anything. After the day is through, you stick around. They got to count your tickets, which is another hour, hour and a half that you're not getting paid for. You get back into town, probably about 6. You live in a trailer or a little shack with probably about 10 other people, 10 or 12 other people. All of you are paying $50 a week in rent, which comes out to more than, I mean, you could easily buy a house in no time with that much money. But you have to settle for this little trailer because there's no other place to live. Shacked up with a bunch of, you know, other people that you don't really know, because people are coming from different places. And you gotta wait to eat, because you have to wait for other people to you know, cook. You take turns cooking food, take turns taking a shower. There's only one shower, there's only one stove, so you don't really have any time to hang out and enjoy anything, because by the time you get done with all of that stuff, it's nighttime, time to go to sleep, so that you can get up early in the morning and do it all over again. That's a good situation. That's a good farm worker life. I mean, that's because the bad stuff is slavery, you know, is getting beat up in the fields and stuff, dying of cancer from pesticide exposure. Yeah, or exhaustion. I can't tell you how many times a friend of mine who was out working, you know, got hurt or something. Maybe their back from bending over all day long has just given out and just can't work for a couple of days. But instead of going to the doctor, because it'll cost more to go to the doctor than it would to stay home for a few days, for 3, 4, 5 days, you know. And so the person just stays home, waits till the pain goes away, and gets back to work. So, I mean, there's no benefits whatsoever, you know. There's no health insurance, there's no sick leave, there's no paid vacation, there's no overtime pay for overtime work. There's no benefits that everybody, you know, like maybe people in construction or carpentry, you know, we don't have any of that stuff. Those are just one of the things that we're trying to change in the system, the agricultural industry.
Sure, our listeners throughout the world would like to know, how much money does a farm worker make in a hard day's work? And this campaign for improving a living wage is just that. I don't really understand how people in the year 2004 can really survive on the menial piecework they get, especially as a farm worker that's getting older up in age. It must be extremely difficult to get even survival wages. But will you talk a little bit about the wage situation and how much an average worker might make, and how hard that is, and any ways in which the landowners or so-called growers control that?
So, right now the average farm worker makes about $7,500 to $8,000 a year, which is well below poverty level. I think poverty level right now is what, like 14,000, something like that. So we're close to half of what the poverty level is right now.
But when I was a laborer raking blueberries, also working in the woods in the forest industry as a laborer, as a choker, we would have to fight to get our pay. In fact, that's one of the main reasons why I was an activist with the Maine Woodsman's Association, the first union that really included Native American as well as French American woods workers, which really was one of the first time to force the huge multinational forest industries. I won't say paper companies, because it's more than just paper companies. The forest industry, they had to face the incredible situation they were forcing upon us poor people who worked in the Maine woods. I would imagine that's similar here in the agricultural industry of what's called South Florida or the Southeast U.S., where even after a long, hard day of work, you don't always get your pay, that the so-called pay bosses or the crew bosses might be corrupt or cheat you out of your pay, or probably don't have much of an ability to contest that. Is that so?
Yeah, I mean, back about 7 years ago, actually, well, since the organization started, that used to happen a lot out in Immokalee, where contractors just wouldn't, they would hire people on the spot and then just not pay them afterwards. I don't know, when you're faced with a situation like that, you know, people who, you're from a different country, you're in a new place, you don't really speak the language. I mean, you kind of have two choices in your head. One is like, you can either go to the cops, or you can, and who knows what happens, you know what I'm saying? I mean, either they won't do anything or they'll put you in jail. Or you could just kind of forget about it and, you know, go find work somewhere else. And I think that's one of the things that the Coalition of Immokalee Workers has, like, that's one of the most important things that the Coalition of Immokalee Workers has changed, is like the state of mind that people are in. When before, they would settle for going somewhere else and not worrying about it. I mean, now they realize that they have power, and they have a place to go where they can talk about what's going on and try to figure out ways to change it. So people, I mean, I think a lot of people now aren't trapped, you know, inside, like, aren't basically, I mean, what was happening before is basically like mind slavery, you know, making a person have fear, making a person not be able to think about trying to get out of the situation, you know, I mean, it's Immokalee in general, and the agricultural industry in general, was just like this big wall. They'd close people up inside it so that people could not see outside of it, could not see that there was a different way. And when the coalition started organizing and people just started realizing that they could, that, you know, they can do something to make a change. Yeah, so I think that's one of the most important things that the coalition was able to achieve, was that change in state of mind. And, I mean, as just a last note, I guess, for the people who are listening, just, I really hope that you got something out of our discussion here in terms of realizing the power that you have to make a change. Right now we have a Taco Bell boycott. In terms of the Taco Bell boycott, you have a lot of power in the way that you... I mean, one of the reasons why we've chosen Taco Bell is because of their image. You know, their image is all out there. Like, I mean, let's say a few years back, if you went across the country and you could ask anybody out there, you know, do you know what the situation is like in Immokalee, you know, the farm workers and stuff, and most likely people would be like, you know, what are you talking about? But the situation is like in Immokalee, you know, the farm workers and stuff, and most likely people would be like, you know, what are you talking about? I don't know. But if you ask them, do you know who Taco Bell is? Their response would be, oh yeah, I know, I just ate there last night or something, you know. Yeah. Taco Bell relies on us. We are the consumers. We're the people who make them as big as they are. Because of that, we're the people who can, you know, control them, who can bring them back down to the level that they need to be in, which is, you know, and that level is, you know, working together, instead of just trying to control and take everything. And just realize the power that you have. Before you go and, you know, eat something, get some fruits and vegetables, think about where those fruits and vegetables are coming from. Think about the people in Immokalee, think about the people just everywhere, even in terms of like the clothes you wear and the shoes you wear. Think about the people who made those shoes, because in reality, we're not going to change anything unless we start to think about those things. So yeah, that's it. And if anybody wants more information, you can go to our website, www.ciw-online.org. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Listening to Yat Kedetshi Native Center's Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
Music from Native American flutist Robert Tree Cody and Hovaya Edwards from their Canyon Records CD, Reflections. That very beautiful honor song was entitled Buffalo Prayer Song. Well, dear friends, we are nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Native Radio. In the remaining time, I want to reiterate the importance of supporting farm worker justice wherever you live. I call on all of our worldwide listeners to actively support the Taco Bell boycott. Do not eat at a Taco Bell restaurant. Write to Yum Brands Food CEO David Novak and demand that Yum Brands guarantee fair wages and fair working conditions for farm workers in its supply chain. The address to write to is David Novak, Chief Executive Officer, Yum Brands. That's capital Yumbrands. 1441 Gardiner Lane, Louisville, Kentucky. 40213 USA. Once again, the address to write to is Chief Executive Officer of Yum Brands, Mr. David Novak. The address, 1441 Gardiner, Gardiner Lane. That's Louisville, Louisville, Kentucky. Zip code 40213 USA. In 2003, the multinational Yum Company reported a total of $16.4 billion in profits. The average annual income of a farm worker who picks tomatoes that Yum Brands use in their products is $7,500, well below the U.S. official poverty level. Florida farm workers have labored under the same poor conditions since the 1970s. Tomato pickers still have to pick 2 tons of tomatoes to earn $50 in one day. Would you work in the sweltering heat for more than 12 hours per day and know that you will make sub-poverty wages? So please support the Taco Bell boycott. Taco Bell is a major buyer of Florida tomatoes, and as such, profits from farm worker poverty and substandard working conditions I call servitude. The Coalition of Mockery Workers website, www.ciw-online.org, provides a great deal of information about farm worker justice and the Taco Bell boycott. You can also telephone Coalition of Mockery Workers at area code 239-657-8311. Their U.S. mailing address for information is CIW, P.O. Box 603, Immokalee, capital I-M-M-O-K-A-L-E-E, Florida. Zip code 34143 USA. Now, Yum Brands, the parent company of Taco Bell, has the power to demand its suppliers abide by an enforceable code of conduct. Yum can pay its suppliers one more penny per pound of tomatoes and demand this be passed on to farm workers in the form of increased wages. Again, I ask our listeners, would you work 10 to 12-hour days in incredibly hot and hard field conditions? Would you work under an abusive farm contractor or a crew boss with no benefits, no overtime pay, no sick leave, no affordable health care for you and your family, no kind of pension or retirement plan, and face serious retaliation for trying to stand up for your basic human and labor rights? This is the situation we are talking about. Modern-day farm workers in America still earn only 40 to 45 cents for every 32-pound bucket of hand-picked tomatoes, while the already incredibly wealthy landowners and agribusiness executives continue to dictate below poverty-level farm worker wages. In extreme cases, workers are held in modern-day slavery and forced to work through violence. CIW's anti-slavery campaign has documented this, and we heard about this in today's very fine conversation with my friend Max Perez here in the studio. I also want to thank our other very special guest here in the studio, Sean Sellers of the Student Farm Worker Alliance, who is working with the Coalition of Mockley Workers. I thank you, Sean, for sharing your thoughts today on honoring Mother Earth's indigenous voices. I want to let our listeners know that the Coalition of Mockley Workers, as well as the Interfaith Action of Southwest Florida, are going to be hosting a very special two-day symposium this upcoming January 15th and 16th, 2005, in Immokalee, Florida. The title of the symposium is Human Rights and the Struggle for Fair Food, Making Dr. King's Dream a Reality. And this is a faith-based symposium in the heart of Florida's farm worker community. And there are a number of very fine workshops that I will mention briefly from their flyer. The workshops will include the history of the Coalition of Mockley Workers, the Coalition of Mockley Workers anti-slavery campaign, support of the Taco Bell boycott, organizing and student youth involvement in social justice, campaigns for socially responsible purchasing, consuming, and investing, and much, much more. There will be a walking tour of the Immokalee farm working community, and Saturday evening on the 15th of January. There'll be a dinner followed by a prayer vigil and a celebration with the farm worker community of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s life. Sunday, there'll be more focused workshops and follow-up to some of the sessions that were held on Saturday. And Sunday morning at 5 to 7 a.m., participants can experience a farm worker morning and see the workday begin and how difficult life is for our brothers and sisters who are still those who are harvesting in the fields. This very important symposium, as I mentioned, co-sponsored by the Interfaith Action of Southwest Florida and CIW, has a very nice description of the event, and I just want to share with you several of the paragraphs to give you more background information. And I will quote, read exactly as it's printed here in their flyer. In the final years of his life, Dr. King argued that the movement for civil rights must become a movement for human rights that ensured the equality, livelihood, and well-being of all God's children. A strong supporter of farm worker organizing, Dr. King challenged America that in the struggles for genuine equality, the principalities and powers must be confronted and they must be changed. Join the coalition of Immokalee workers, communities of faith, and religious leaders from across the country for this symposium, where we will explore Dr. King's dream in light of the struggle for fair food, an end to slavery in the fields, and the Taco Bell boycott campaign, unquote. So again, to register for the symposium and for more information, please contact Amy Ullo of Interfaith Action of Southwest Florida at telephone area code 239-657-8311. You can also get more information about this symposium on the Coalition of Immokalee Workers website, www.ciw-online.org. And I very much look forward to participating in this very important symposium for farm worker justice. Speaking of farm worker justice, we're going to conclude with an honor song. And I'm particularly going to send out my appreciation and honoring to two very important people in the farm worker justice history, and that is, of course, Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta, who in 1962 founded the National Farm Workers Association, later to become the United Farm Workers. And I am very proud to wear the Azteca Eagle button symbol of the United Farm Workers. And as I mentioned, myself, along with many other Native American people, grew up as farm workers, and we understand this social environmental justice issue is still very much, sadly, something that needs much more attention and is really just an extension of the history of colonization and globalization. So this is an honor song for the United Farm Workers, and you can find out more about their important struggles and excellent work through their website. The UFW website is www.ufw.org. So this particular song is from the Siksika Ramblers. It's a powwow drum from the Blackfeet Nation, and it is off their Canyon Records CD, Siksika Rambler, Straight from the Reservation. Until next Wolf Mountain Native Radio program, this is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker, thanking you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Aho, kinon wantakwisin, to all of our relations.